They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Alright, welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies. We're a little late because of some health issues on the part of my partner, Elliot Mogulyines. I am, of course, Nathan Mogulyines. Elliot, this is an exciting episode. It pretty much the whole episode is going to be kind of bantery. So, why don't we just jump into it? Do you have anything that you want to discuss beforehand, or are we ready to talk about our thoughts on the year 2024?
I was just gonna ask, like, for any, like, high level thoughts, what you thought about this year. I do actually have got the top 10 box office earners from 2024. I thought they were interesting. I wanted to read them out and see what you thought. Starting from 10, it's Beetlejuice, Venom the Last Dance, Kung Fu Panda 4, Godzilla X Kong The New Empire, Wicked, Dune Part 2, Moana 2, Despicable Me 4, Deadpool and Wolverine, and then Inside Out is topping the list. I think not a lot of those movies are going to end up being spotlighted in this episode, but, like, what do you think about that? Do you think that that's, like, an accurate reflection of the kind of year that 2024 was in entertainment? Are you disappointed in the movie-going audience? Are you proud of the movie-going audience?
I think, going by that top 10, that's a tough top 10, because some of those movies will actually be highlighted in this episode, but not in a favorable sort of way. But I don't think that top 10, and I think this about every year, except maybe last year, I think usually the top 10 does not reflect the best movie stories of the year. Because I think if you're looking for the best movie stories of the year, there were a ton of super promising art house indie films that did absolute gangbusters. I mean, The Substance did really well, Long Legs, did very well right now. Nosferatu and A Complete Unknown are doing incredibly, incredibly well. And this was also a year where audiences vehemently opposed some terrible movies that deserved it. I mean, Joker 2 got nothing, did not do anything. I was not a fan of Furiosa, so it flopping is completely okay by me. No one really thought Megalopolis had much of a chance of doing really well, but that was another movie that, you know, the audience rejected, and I haven't seen it, but from everything I've heard from you, it maybe deserved to be rejected. So I think it was a really good year for audiences, and I think it continued to demonstrate what I've been telling almost everyone who lets me talk about movies for more than 5 minutes, that our generation is turning to interesting and artistically bold and exciting movies more and more every year. I firmly, firmly believe that. And I think there's some movies that kind of proved me wrong, but I think this was another year that showed that people are, right? That Long Legs did really well, largely through, like, word of mouth, positive reviews, and the fact that it was an exciting new sort of movie. So I think it was a really good year for movies. I'm really happy with the movies I have on my best of list. I think there's just always going to be doomers who, yeah, look at the top 10 and say, look, it's all stupid cash grab sequels. Isn't that so depressing? And it's like, okay, well, let's look at the biggest financial successes by, like, net profit. And then I think you're looking at a pretty good list.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some truth to that. I think that probably pretty often the movies that make the most money are not necessarily going to be the highest quality.
Yeah.
And there have been movies that have been successful, not in the same way that Deadpool and Wolverine was. That is cause for optimism. I, of course, am not optimistic about anything. I have to say, I don't think this year was so great. I actually kind of struggled to get a best of list together, and it really only came together because of a few movies coming in at the last minute to give me what I needed. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Of course, movies are going to keep on getting made, good and bad.
True.
And yeah, there's just, we're all just hopeless. We're all just helpless little drones adrift in an uncaring sea.
Okay, all right. That's quite enough of that, Elliot. So yeah, I think let's kick this off. We didn't decide on an order before we started recording, but I was thinking we'd do worst of the year, then we'd do maybe favorite book, then best of the movies that we saw this year, not from this year. Then we could do video game. Then we could do best of the year. Actually, maybe do video game and TV show, since you have a TV show and I don't. Then we do the best of the year and then most anticipated for next year.
Sure, that's great. logistics is always entertaining.
Well, this way, if they don't want to hear us yap about books, they know to skip as soon as we finish talking about the worst movies.
Yeah, we should put in timestamps.
I don't know if you, well, we could actually, but that seems like a lot of effort. Anyway, let's kick this off, Elliot, with the worst of 2024. I'm gonna say this before we even start, that there are some movies from 2024 that might have landed either on the best or worst of this list that I haven't seen yet. Obviously, all of the foreign films are very difficult to see until, like, the middle of February here in rural Iowa, as well as I haven't seen The Brutalist or Anora, again, because of partially a lack of trying. So I'll just say that there might be movies. Anyway, let's start this off. I can go with my first worst movie of the year, and it was one that was on that list that you just mentioned, and that's going to be Kung Fu Panda 4. I thought this was an aggressively egregious affront to almost everything that I love about the Kung Fu Panda series. I'm not here to say that Kung Fu Panda, the trilogy, is like the Godfather or something. But when we reviewed Kung Fu Panda for the podcast, I said that this was one of the favorites of my childhood. I really like pandas. I'm a bit of a panda guy. So having an animated movie about a Kung Fu Panda was, like, amazing to me as a child. And I'm really excited that I'm finally able to have the experience of watching a stupid cash grab sequel try to and succeed, evidently, at playing on nostalgia and getting a lame sequel. It has nothing that's good about any of the other Kung Fu Panda movies. There's no reason for this movie to exist. Po does not go on any sort of meaningful journey. They remove a large bulk of the supporting cast from this movie in The Furious Five, not appearing at all. The villain is lame. The movie is paced so aggressively poorly. It feels like it's at a breakneck speed, and while at the same time not saying anything of substance or anything entertaining. It has Awkwafina, everyone's favorite actress, to show up in recent movies. This is just, Elliot, I think you saw this too, but this landed on my list just because I am kind of a fan of the Kung Fu Panda franchise, and this, I thought this was even worse than I expected it to be.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. That movie's terrible. It's also on my list of worst. So I don't actually have much to add there. I would say that the log line for this movie is that it's just been completely hollowed out. Mm. Like, all of the reasons that Kung Fu Panda, I think, was successful, apart from being, right, a breezy,
yeah,
funny animal movie, that's always, that kind of thing is just very successful with children. I think Poe's relatability as kind of like the everyman. Of course, the Furious Five. Just everything that the movies were once founded upon has been completely gutted, and we're left with just this soulless husk of a movie. I really disliked it. I thought it was terrible. And I was very disappointed. I was disappointed to see it on the top 10 list. Let's try and do better, guys.
Yeah, DreamWorks, what on earth is going... They had to have made some sort of deal with Satan where they can only make good movies every other time. Because their previous movie before this was Puss in Boots 2, I'm pretty sure, which we reviewed very favorably on the podcast. And their movie that they released after this was The Wild Robot, which is one of the few, I'll say, one of the few, like, very critically acclaimed movies from this year that I have yet to see. But Elliot, I think you saw this, and it was a big hit with people.
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. I didn't love it. But it's definitely better than Kung Fu Panda 4.
All right. Well, my next one, let's see if we can keep this up. Let's see if we agree on all three. That'd be kind of neat. Actually, I already know that...
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, our number ones are different. But anyway, the next one for me is Ethan Coen's Drive Away Dolls. This was a movie that made me genuinely angry having to watch it. I think it is an annoying movie. It is annoying both in terms of characters. I hated every single character in this movie. I didn't want them to succeed. I was kind of upset that that some of the characters got a happy ending, because I was so annoyed with so many of them. The style of the movie feels intentionally like juvenile and stupid. The transition scenes are so dumb. They look terrible, and they annoyed me every time they did a goofy PowerPoint like transition. It is like a Coen Brothers movie, but if it was made by the most annoying liberal arts filmmaker you've ever seen. It is such a frustrating movie. It's Dang. Not charming. I really, really hated this movie, Elliot. It made me... I think between The Tragedy of Macbeth and this movie, it's pretty obvious who was, like, the main contributor to the quality of the Coen Brothers movies.
Oof.
But I think it's also that, like, the type of Coen Brothers movie I like is the type of Coen Brothers movie that it seems like Joel brought to the forefront. That I like the philosophical, I like the very slow, kind of more adult sort of things. I am not a huge fan of, like, The Big Lebowski or I'm not a huge fan of The Big Lebowski. Maybe that's the one. I don't like the ones where they're trying to be really funny with it, or at least where they're trying really hard to be funny. And this felt like one of those movies, that it was just annoying. I think the central two characters, it doesn't make any sense for them to... I'm going to spoil it here, but it doesn't make any sense for them to end up together, because it's not believable in the slightest to me that this is a good relationship, this is a relationship that's going to go in a positive direction for either of these two characters. And yeah, I think this movie convinced me that I think Ethan must have been solely responsible for Barton Fink. Like, he was the only one who wrote that.
Wow. Nathan feels very strongly about this. And I do too. I also despise this movie. It's not on my list, not because it's good, but just because there are other movies that I disliked more. But yeah, I can't speculate, obviously, about the talent in their partnership. It's not like my partnership with Nathan, where it's pretty obvious that I have all the talent and Nathan's just goodness. Kind of hanging on. no, dude, the scene, I won't spoil it, but there's a scene where, the classic scene where our heroes have been captured, and the way that they get out of it is so unbelievably stupid and lazy. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
That is just awful. Like, that is...
Well, that's what I'm talking
it's like,
about.
It's basically like divine intervention, like the hand of God intervening to make something impossibly contrived happen so that they can get out. It's just ridiculous.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, that it feels like a Coen Brothers movie by way of someone who's never made a movie before. Because a lot of the other Coen Brothers movies do have these sorts of like bizarre twists of fate leading to like characters escaping something or characters getting out of something, but this movie felt, yeah, it felt so contrived, whereas the other Coen Brothers movies, it felt much more like it was really fun to see, like, oh my goodness, that's where they were going with this thing the whole time, that's so neat. And in this one, it was just like, oh, we wrote ourselves into a corner, so let's make up some nonsense.
Yeah. All I'll say is I read, before this movie came out, I read an interview in the New York Times with Ethan Coen and his, Trisha Cook, who is his wife, I guess, where they said, I'm paraphrasing, but they were like, oh, we want to make a movie that's like, that's trashy, that's a throwback to the American trash of like the 70s and the 80s. And to that I would say, mission accomplished. Great job, guys. but that's enough of that. My next one, pause for a second. How many of these are we supposed to do?
Three.
Okay, good. That's what I did. Yeah, my next one, I've been waiting literally all year to talk about this movie because it came out, I think, in like January or February, and that is Amazon's remake of Roadhouse. And another thing I've been waiting all year to talk about is just get out of here with this whole like, oh, Roadhouse is such a classic. That movie is terrible. there's a difference between simple, unpretentious fun and a movie that's just low effort. Gosh, I hated Roadhouse and I hated the remake. So I guess that makes some amount of sense. This movie it's not dissimilar to Kung Fu Panda in that it's just completely soulless. There's no really likable character. Jake Gyllenhaal, I don't know, man, he's a great actor, but he just seems so confused in this movie. Like, it seems like he has either received no direction or way too much direction. Because he never really feels like he's settled on a single character trait. And yeah, of course, the movie's just really dumb. There's a scene, here's something I'll spoil. Spoiler alert, in case you're worried. There's a scene where the bad guy is escaping on a speedboat with a kidnapped woman, and there are so many shots of, it's like a shot on the front of the boat facing towards him, and so you could see him, and he's paying really close attention to where he's going, and of course the bed of the boat is completely open, so you could just see the woman sitting out in the open unobserved, like she has got an open goal to just jump out, and it never happens. It was very funny after a while. So yeah, don't watch that movie. I'm not sure why you would, unless you liked the original Roadhouse, in which case I'll just sit here silently judging you.
That's so funny. I haven't seen that. I'm never gonna watch that. Roadhouse is one of those movies that I see critical acclaim for, or I see people talking about, and I just assume that it's like, okay, you saw it when you were like 18 in a theater and it was the coolest thing ever, but like it holds, it's like when Dad showed us Highlander and we were both like, Dad, that sucked, that was terrible. Anyway, my least favorite movie of the year, and this is a movie I kind of teased my feelings towards in a couple of episodes ago when the Golden Globes nominations came out, and this is my least favorite movie mainly because I'm now seeing so much acclaim for it, and that's going to be Netflix's Emilia Perez.
Oh, yeah.
This is looking like a lock for a lot of Oscar nominations. It's been getting a lot of praise from a lot of different publications. If you look a bit further than that, it has been a very controversial movie in that the reactions to it have been very divided, and I find myself firmly in the, this is one of the stupidest movies I've ever seen. The plot makes no sense. It falls apart. I wouldn't even say it falls apart under any amount of scrutiny. I think it just falls apart by nature of existence. It is a infallible piece of the plot, is that the plot doesn't make sense and doesn't work. The central performances of the movie, which have been praised, I can't fathom why anyone is praising them. Selena Gomez is one of the worst castings I've ever seen. She brings the least amount of energy and power to a mob boss wife role that I've ever seen in my life. It is abysmal how uncharismatic, uncompelling, and uninteresting she is. Zoe Saldana is a little bit better, but even her character doesn't make any sense, and her journey doesn't make any sense, and it feels like the movie abandons all of the ideas it starts her character arc with as soon as the plot kicks into gear. And then the final one, Carla Sofia Gascon, she's again doing okay work, but the movie is so uninterested at following through any of its millions of stupid plot lines. Every scene is just them introducing an idea to immediately drop that idea and go on to a less interesting idea in the next scene. The movie is also a musical where none of the songs are good. Almost all the songs are, like, only 2 minutes long. They're not catchy. They're not compelling. They're stupid. I believe the movie is supposed to be funny. I don't think I ever laughed at anything outside of the ridiculousness of the gigantic plot holes the movie is asking me to swallow. It says nothing interesting about anything, even though it tries to say something about practically everything, which I think is an idiotic way to write a movie. It is such a frustrating movie. I'm gonna be livid when it receives awards later on. If Selena Gomez is nominated for an Oscar, we just have to, I mean, we gotta throw in the towel at some point, and that might be the place to do it. It's ludicrous. It's so terrible.
Wow, that was ruthless.
I hate that movie.
Oh, fair enough. I have not seen that movie, and Nathan has talked at length about it to me, just in general, and he has successfully scared me off it. So
good.
Yeah. My worst movie of the year, this is going to be a quick one because I've already talked a little bit about it. It's going to be Megalopolis. This would absolutely, if we had done the worst movies episode, our worst movies episode after watching Megalopolis, it would definitely be on there. This wow. is without a doubt one of the worst movies I have ever seen in my life, and I've seen a few movies. I don't have anything to add to what I said on the podcast or what's on the blog. This is just a disaster from start to finish, and if it does, as Coppola continually insist it will, get some kind of reevaluation somewhere down the line, or like develop a cult following, I'm gonna be very sad.
Wow. Well, I haven't seen that movie again because I think Elliot kind of scared me off on wanting to have to pay money to see it. I'll maybe see it sometime if it's at the library and I can rent it for free, as well as support a vital public institution in the library. All right, well, that's our worst movies. It's always fun to bash some movies, as well as now we just get to talk about things that we like, which I personally have a lot more fun with. So we're going to start with our favorite books from the year. This is an interesting year. It's, for me, it's going to be kind of a franchise as represented by one book, because I started reading the Discworld series by the late British author Terry Pratchett, and I have just thoroughly enjoyed every single one of them. There's like 41 and I'm up through like 14, and I'm very excited to continue reading these and continue going deeper in this franchise. So I'm gonna, to represent that, I'm gonna talk about the first one of these that I read, which is Guards, which he opens as an homage to every meaningless extra who's ever rushed into a room to be immediately decapitated by the hero in any fantasy story ever. It's so funny. It's all of the Discworld books are incredibly funny. They all have this incredibly, they're so good at being consistently entertaining and consistently exciting. Every time I'm reading one of these books, it feels like I'm 20 pages away from the climax, even when I'm like 200 pages away from the climax. That the book is always increasing the amount of excitement, increasing the amount of intrigue, increasing the amount of like every positive emotion I could possibly be having. And the characters are fantastic. If you've read Discworld, I don't think I'm breaking any new ground by saying that Death is maybe one of the greatest characters in all of literature. He's such a fascinating character. He's so well done. He's so funny. He also, his dialogue is written in a different style from the rest of the cast. So it's always a ton of fun to be reading the book and then somebody says something in this different style and you know that, oh, this means Death is here and this means, right, someone's going to die, something's going to happen. It's such a fun thing. The entire franchise is so great. Guards especially is super funny. I love the main character, Sam Vimes. He's such a great character. He's super interesting. So Discworld has been one of the most enjoyable like book reading experiences since I like read all the Redwall books when I was a kid. So I've had a lot of fun with it.
Wow, yeah. Okay, then. Nathan has been talking a lot about those books over this past year. So I guess it shouldn't surprise me that that would end up being your favorite, but it did surprise me.
Wow.
Yeah, I have not read any of those books. I can't remember what it was called, but I tried to read a Terry Pratchett book once, and I really bounced off of it pretty hard because I found his style, I found his style to be a little bit too cutesy and self-aware, almost Marvel-y in a certain way of like the nudging, I'm like, isn't this funny? That was a long time ago, so maybe I was just a silly youngin. Maybe I'll have to give it another go. I've read a lot of books this year, and most of them I don't remember because I have a system for keeping track of the movies that I watch, but I don't have the same system for books. And maybe I should do that because I found I had to like really comb through my bookshelf to remind myself what all I had read. Work continues apace on In Search of Lost Time, but I'm not done with that yet because it's like 4,000 pages long, so... I do want to give an honorable mention, actually.
Oh.
Because I was really debating between these two books, and I ended up deciding for one, which will be revealed shortly. But the honorable mention, because I did want to mention it honorably, in fact, has to go to Animal Farm.
Oh.
I'm not sure if we've talked about this before, but I am on record as saying that 1984 sucks. I really dislike that book. I think that it is really interesting, and it has a lot to say about authoritarianism and control and surveillance. It's just, the problem is that the book, like the story itself and the characters are just trash. So I was really surprised when I read Animal Farm and I loved it. I thought it was really funny. I think that maybe it's aiming a little bit lower than 1984 because Animal Farm is basically just a satirical retelling of the Russian Revolution and then the Bolshevik Revolution and the establishment of the Soviet Union. But I just really liked it. And I was going to go into further depth, but then I was like, oh, wait, I'm not actually supposed to be talking about this book. So, no, my favorite book, actually, coming back to James S. A. Corey, I think the first year in review we ever did, my favorite book was The Expanse series, written by Corey, which is actually the pen name of two different people working together. And this year, they're back. They came out with The Mercy of Gods. This is the first installment of a new series that they're working on. And honestly, it blew me away. I had got the book and I hadn't started reading it. And then I came home for Thanksgiving and I was like, oh, I'll just use this book. I'll read it on the trip because we drive like 4 hours or so to Illinois. So I was like, oh, just do that. And I dipped in a little bit a few days before we left because I was like, well, I'll just get started. And then I ended up reading the whole thing in like 2 days. And I didn't have anything to read for the rest of the trip. So, but that just speaks to how good the book was. It's about humanity in the very far future who have colonized so far and so long that they don't actually remember where they came from. They don't actually remember Earth. And humanity gets colonized by an alien species that... There's a lot of unknowns, and I won't spoil it because I think that if you're into this kind of thing, you absolutely should read it. But basically, it's about this team of humans who are forcibly the like MO of this conquering species. The Kerix is what they're called, is to like basically purge all of the useless parts of a society and a culture and fold in all of the parts that they deem worthy. So they're very coldly logical like that. And the way they do that is they have these different teams representing the best of the best working on different problems in this like facility. So that's most of the book. And it sounds not particularly interesting, but all of the characters are fascinating and really well differentiated. And they get into some really interesting stuff about different factions wanting to resist, and some within the humans, I mean, and some factions being more wary about getting themselves killed and getting others killed. I'm honestly not doing it justice, so I'll just say it's really good. It is really interesting, and if you like science fiction, and especially if you liked the Expanse, I think this will be right up your alley.
Wow, that does sound really good, and I do like science fiction like that. And I do remember you telling me when I got to home for Thanksgiving that you had messed up and now you needed something else. Okay, so now we're going to do our favorite movies that we saw this year, but that are not from this year. We watch a lot of movies, not just stuff from this year. We watch just a lot of movies in general. So I'm going to start, and I'm not going to talk super long about this movie because I've already talked about it in our episode where we tried to put together a best of the 2000s list. But that's going to be Steve McQueen's Hunger, that I finally got around to watching this. I'm a big fan of Steve McQueen's other movies that I've seen, Shame and 12 Years a Slave. So I really wanted to see Hunger. I finally found a way to watch it, and I was blown away. I think this is such an incredible movie. It looks amazing. It is so, so well done stylistically, that it's such a nasty story, but the movie does such an amazing job of a very, I would say, kind of Kubrickian style of filmmaking, or Fincher if you're more into modern sort of directors, of just very matter of fact showing you the facts of an event and letting you kind of process how you want to feel about this event. And I thought it was amazing. I mean, I've already said I wanted it to be on our list or for the top 10 of the 2000s. I would put it for sure in by my personal list of the top 10 of the 2000s. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was a fascinating look at people in a situation where the only way they could exert any power over a situation is by hurting themselves, and kind of the dichotomy of all of us, or all of some people, that we use a lot of violence against others and against ourselves to try and exert control over situations that we can't, and isn't that kind of futile? So I thought Hunger was amazing. I was blown away by almost every piece of it. The performances by Michael Fassbender is incredible. I've said other things about this movie. I thought it was amazing.
All right then, yeah. I have not gotten around to that movie yet. I do really want to watch it, and I was sad that I didn't watch it in time for the best of the 2000s list, and we had to veto it kind of by default. I actually had some struggles with this because I realized that if basically, because like I saw American Fiction and The Zone of Interest in 2024, despite them having come out in 2023, so that would technically qualify them for this list, but I've talked about both of them at length already, so I wanted to spotlight some older movies. But just in case you're wondering, I do think that both of those movies are fantastic. And The Zone of Interest is probably one of the best movies of the 21st century. So I'll go ahead and start with a movie called Sometimes I Think About Dying. When was it actually? Sometimes I think... 2023! Wow! I thought it was way older than that. This is a movie, and honestly, let's just restart here. Movies about modern malaise or ennui honestly have become an entire genre unto themselves, of just movies about lonely people going through life and just being a bit sad. So you probably recognize the setup for this movie of it's about a lonely woman kind of going through life and being sad. But its execution, I think, you were definitely not prepared for. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it. And I really think that people should watch this movie, especially if you have experience with or sympathy for this kind of feeling of isolation. But yeah, it's got just the right mix of the slightly surreal and the more grounded. It features a really strong performance from Daisy Ridley in the leading role. I think it does prove that she has more range than the Star Wars sequels imply. It's very unique, and it's unfortunate because there's no way for me to explain its uniqueness without spoiling it, so I'm going to have to ask for a little trust, a little faith that I'm not just crazy. Although maybe I am. Obviously, that's always a possibility. But I think that this movie has an understanding of the modern malaise, and the way it communicates and portrays that is not really like anything I've seen before. And yeah, I was super into it.
Wow. That's a movie I've been meaning to watch for a bit, and I knew you had watched it and liked it. I didn't realize you liked it that much, so I'm gonna have to get around to seeing it for sure. My next one is we're throwing it way back with this one. It's gonna be Otto Preminger's Anatomy of a Murder. This is a movie from, I think, the 60s. Probably later sort of 60s, I'd imagine. But it's about Jimmy Stewart plays a humble country lawyer trying to help a man escape persecution for a crime that he committed in kind of a... this is kind of similar to, sometimes I think about that. I think everything that's interesting about this movie is most interesting if you don't know what's coming with this movie. So I'm just going to say I would compare this very favorably to another movie I'm going to talk about later today, Clint Eastwood's newest movie, Juror Number Two, in that I think it is such a fascinating look at the justice system, at questions of what is justice, and isn't it kind of unfortunate that it's kind of the flip side of 12 Angry Men, where it's like, oh, isn't it beautiful that people can come into a thing and use their sympathy and emotion to come to a correct decision. Anatomy of a Murder is like, dang, isn't it terrible that like that could be used against us, and that could be used in a way that is negative. The movie is just so fascinating. It's such a fun ride. It's almost like 3 hours long, but it felt like it was an hour and a half. It felt like every new twist was so well earned. Jimmy Stewart is incredible in a role that I think was practically written for exactly him. I really, really, really loved this movie, and it's stuck around in my head since I've watched it way back in like February.
Wow. Okay, then. I have not seen that movie, but it sounds good. I would love to watch it. My next one is going to be one that I have actually mentioned already, but it's going to be The King of Comedy. I don't really have a lot to add to the discourse around this movie. It's very popular, very well received. It wasn't well received initially, but it has since, I think, gained the kind of reevaluation that I'm hoping Megalopolis doesn't have. But it's about a clearly somewhat mentally disturbed man who has developed a parasocial relationship with a night show comedy host. And I don't think it's spoiling too much to say that it kind of gets out of control. This is probably the first movie in a very long time where I have enjoyed Robert De Niro's performance enough to... not hold Once Upon a Time in America against him, because usually when he shows up, I'm just like, I know what you did. I know what you did, man. But yeah, and of course, the last, like, well, the climax of the movie is famous, and I think rightfully so, because it is, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 minutes of absolute perfection, where the camera never cuts. And it's basically just you and this character in a one-on-one situation where he's revealing stuff about himself. It's masterful. And the rest of the movie is really good as well. Obviously, Scorsese, I don't think he has it in him to make a movie that's just bad all the way through. That, like, there's nothing good about it. But yeah, all of his strengths, I think, are on full display here in terms of his camera work, in terms of the stories that he likes to tell, in terms of everything. So yeah, if this is one of those like old movies that you've heard about people liking but never pulled the trigger on, I would say go for it. I think that it holds up perfectly today.
Yeah. I also like that movie quite a bit, and I would strongly second all of your comments about the end of the movie. I don't like it as much as you, but most of my fondness for the movie is because the last, like, 20 minutes are just stunningly good. My last one, it's going to be another one that you haven't seen, Elliot, unless you've gotten really into French movies from the 40s since the last time I talked to you last week.
Have I not mentioned my newfound love affair with French movies from the 40s?
Oh, darn. That's so interesting. Well, then you must have seen Children of Paradise, a movie that was made, I believe, during the Nazi occupation of France, which is not super relevant until you watch the movie and discover that they created, like, an entire city of sets, and the movie is insanely extravagant and had to have cost a fortune, and how on earth did they do that with Nazis? Apparently a large chunk of, like, the extras in this movie were members of the French Resistance. I don't know. The making of the movie is fascinating. The movie itself is such an incredible story. It felt to me like watching The Godfather, but for France, kind of, that it's just it also kind of feels like a classic 19th century novel that was never written, but somehow the director got a hold of it and adapted it into this movie. It follows, I think, like four or five different characters through a very long period of France's history as they kind of interact with each other, fall in love, and then get pulled apart. It is really the biggest thing with this movie for me is that it's just such a huge movie that there's so many characters, so many different things happening, and it's just fascinating to watch all of these characters develop. It is epic in sense of the scale of the story, of the years that this story takes place over, as well as the number of different people that interact and grow and change as you watch the movie. I thought it was so amazing, and then to discover that it was made during this just crazy difficult time in France, that it had to have been a Herculean effort. I believe the director also, because the Nazis only allowed movies up to an hour and a half because they're Nazis and they hate great things, he lied to them and said that he was actually making two movies, but he was actually just making one 3-hour long film that has a break halfway through. But it's so amazing. I really enjoyed it. If you've never watched, like, old movies, or you're not really into foreign movies, I feel like it's a super accessible, super easy to watch. It's kind of long, but I did not feel the length, so I would strongly recommend anyone to watch it. I thought it was so great.
Wow. Yeah, I guess I must have missed that when I was watching all those old French movies.
Oh, wow.
But that sounds great. Kind of getting me hyped to watch it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'll definitely give that a look. Nazis are so petty, man. Like, that's such an arbitrary rule to have. Oh, no movies longer than an hour and a half, because then my brain starts hurting. I
well,
can't
the
pay attention
did,
that long.
You know, this, you know, since you brought this up, I did see a story recently that the Nazis hated all art that wasn't, like, Nazi art. And so they actually set up, I read about this recently, they set
talk about the degenerate art exhibition.
Yes. And then they set up an art exhibition to be like, oh, look at how stupid art is, or how stupid this non-Nazi art is. And then people went to it and were like, hey, this is kind of sick. So they had to close it, which I think is really funny. I guess Elliot, you know, doesn't like avant-garde art, so he's not a fan of it. I don't know what his issue is.
No, it's not that, obviously. It's just that I seem to remember reading that, like people do often mention this, and they're like, oh, ha-ha, look at the Nazis being owned. But in reality, it's not that people were like, oh, this is great art. It's more that, like, degenerate art or things that are supposed to be forbidden are just inherently, like, people are just going to be more interested in that than, quote-unquote, regular art. So it's a bit less of a, like, I don't know. It's just not as inspiring as I wish it was.
Okay. All right. Well,
and I wish it was like, oh, yeah, stick it to the Nazis. But actually, it's just people, right, just being titillated by the idea of forbidden art.
Okay. No, that's right. I think you're right on that. Anyway, Elliot, what's your last favorite movie of this year? Not from this year.
Yeah, that's going to be The Promised Land. Mm. This is a Western starring Mads Mikkelsen, the man, the myth, the legend. It's set in Denmark. It's made in Denmark, I'm pretty sure. But it's about a... It's a classic Western setup where a member kind of the old guard, someone from a different time, basically, who is out to set up a farm on some land that has historically been thought to be uninhabitable, and he comes into conflict with a young nobleman who wants to own the land. And so there's a back and forth between them. Yeah, like I said, this is a classically Western setup of a conflict between a more traditional, an older man who's just got, who operates under a set of ideals and notions that are falling out of favor, and a younger man, typically a much wealthier man, who is in a position of power but clearly hasn't earned it. He's a lesser man than our older hero. So yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about this movie other than it's just a really well done, fantastic Western. It features Mads Mikkelsen. He's a great actor, and this is a really great character. He's your typical gruff, grizzled, stubbled Western hero who learns to show, who makes friends and shows empathy and grows as a person. It's not the most action-packed movie of all time, but it's just really entertaining, man, and so well done. This movie's a looker in terms of the cinematography and the lighting. And everything about all the technical elements are really firing. It's got some real moments, some moments that made me a little sad when things happened to characters that I liked. And I was like, oh, man, I was really rooting for that guy. But yeah, that's what you want from your movies. So this is probably, of the movies that I've talked about, this is definitely the most unpretentious, most... just kind of straightforward, entertaining movie, but it is very, very entertaining. And it's just really well done.
Dang. This is another movie that you mentioned early in the year, and I never got around to seeing it. I think it was actually on Obama's favorite movies of this year list, because it is one of those movies that had an international release or like a limited release in 2023, but then didn't really get to the States until 2024. So it's one of those movies that kind of falls into a limbo zone. Anyway, I'm going to do my favorite video game, and then Elliot, you can do your favorite video game and TV show. But I didn't play a lot of video games this year because I was very busy. I have a life, and that's I kind of have to choose, do I want to play a video game or do I want to watch a movie? And a lot of the times, I want to watch a movie. But one video game that I did play that has actually received quite a bit of acclaim here in the later part of this year is Balatro, which is the poker roguelike game that people have been playing. And I think it's fantastic. I think it is a game kind of like Tetris, where it's such a simple concept, but it is one of those things that just takes over your mind, that you're thinking about, oh, how can I put together things in order to get bigger numbers? And it really boils the roguelike genre down to
you're gonna kill me with that.
Down to the essential elements that we love to see numbers get bigger. We love to see the run where you get the thing that goes so well with this other thing, and whoa, now you've got 10 gajillion points. Isn't that great? That Balatro is that, but just that. You have to make poker hands and get points, and you have to get over a certain number of points to progress. And so it's just so much fun. I find myself playing it all the time. I have beaten a lot of the hardest challenges, and I keep coming back to it because it's just so fun to see all of the different ways that you can win. and it's just such a great game. If you've seen people talking about it and you've been like, it can't be that good, I'm here to say I think it is that good. It is so fun, it's so addicting, and it deserves all of the acclaim it's been getting.
Wow, alrighty then. I've also played that game. I like it a lot. And I know that Nathan's very fond of it. That's like a perfect Switch game. If you've got a Switch, or it's even on mobile, so if you've got a phone, I think that that's perfect for you. It is funny. I do feel like roguelikes are tunneling down further and further to like the very, very core of their appeal, to the point that one day a roguelike is going to be announced and you're going to go get it and open the box and it's just going to be a needle full of heroin. It's just like literally just drugs. Just like drugs aimed at making you happy on a biological level.
Yeah.
So yeah, look forward to that. My favorite video game from this year, actually I have two, one from this year and one not from this year. So not from this year, I just want to say, as usual, I'm late to the party. Again, I also did not have much time for games this year. When I saw the Game of the Year awards, there were some on the list where I was like, I've never heard of this. but my favorite game that I played this year is definitely Baldur's Gate 3. Mm. I don't know. Everything you've heard about Baldur's Gate 3 is true. It's a masterpiece. I don't typically like CRPGs, but this game hooked me, and dude, I went hard at this game. I think my first playthrough. I'm never gonna play this game again. I'm never gonna have that kind of time again, because my first playthrough was over 100 hours to finish the game.
Jeez.
But that does speak to the level and the depth of the content here, and yeah, the writing is incredible. It's so flexible, the way that you will do things and like have these stupid ideas in terms of like beating bosses or finishing stories and stuff, and then characters will react to that and you'll realize like the game, the devs knew that you would think of that, and they've just, there's so much work that's gone into ensuring that the game is always reacting to you. So yeah, that's fantastic. My favorite game from this year, again, I haven't played too many, but that's going to be Dragon's Dogma 2. Mm. I really like the original Dragon's Dogma, and I kind of felt like this one was just Dragon's Dogma 2, but more and better. And I was okay with that. It's got a fantastic open world, really satisfying combat. I do wish that there were more monster types, but that's just kind of a nitpick. And of course, the story is just ridiculous. It's like paper thin, which I actually thought was kind of charming, because it felt like a throwback to when video games didn't realize that you could actually have a story with characters and motivations and plot and stakes. But yeah, it's just really fun, pretty much, is basically it. And it's that classic fantasy adventure of just setting out on the open road with your party, fighting goblins, the enemies, goblins, cyclops, trolls, dragons, like that is deep bedrock level fantasy archetypes, and I love fantasy, so for me, like that is the drug for me. That is the heroin. Is just being a knight and wandering into a dragon and fighting it, like that's the kind of stuff that I just love. I just eat that kind of stuff up. So yeah, man. There's that. And then I have to keep on talking because the show is Fallout for me. Yeah. And I don't need to go into too much depth on this because I actually did talk about Fallout pretty extensively when it was coming out. I think this show nailed the tone and the feeling of the games. It's very funny. I really like the characters. I'm really excited for season 2 to see where it all goes. I loved all the little nods and callbacks and stuff to the games. I haven't played all of the games, so I'm sure that there's stuff that I missed from the original games or from Fallout 3 or what have you. And as I said multiple times when I was talking about the show, gosh dang it, for the program, the music is just fantastic. Like Rahman, I'm Jawadi? Sorry, I can't pronounce your last name. What?
Jawadi,
dude, he was bringing it. I listened to this casually, and I think on the Spotify Wrapped thing, the Brotherhood of Steel theme was one of my top songs listened to, because that is a certified classic.
Wow. Yeah, I did not watch enough television shows to justify doing a favorite TV show. If I did, I would do Fallout, probably, because I did really enjoy that. But, like, the only other thing I watched was True Detective Season 4, and that was, like, an affront to my eyes. It was awful. I was like, oh, it's True Detective. Even bad True Detective is still okay. And this is, I mean, it's virtually unrecognizable as True Detective. So it's terrible. But anyway, we're not here to talk about bad things. We're here to talk about good things. And now we're finally to our top five movies from this year. So I'm going to kick us off with my fifth favorite movie of this year. And that's going to be Flow, which has been getting a decent amount of buzz, I think. It's a Latvian movie about a cat trying to survive a flood. And if that premise seems kind of silly to you, watch the movie. This is amazing. It's most likely, I would say it has a decent chance of getting nominations for Best Animated Film and Best Foreign Film. I think it genuinely has a shot at winning Best Animated Film. But this is just a fantastic idea of a movie, and it is so, so incredibly well done. I've seen some people compare the movie to, like, watching a video game cutscene, and I don't see how that's a critique. It looks like a video game I'd love to play. It looks like a ton of fun. It, like, video game cutscenes are great. Like, tons of cool things happen in video game cutscenes. And in this one, a giant whale saves a cat from drowning. This was one of my favorite experiences that I had in theaters. I was the only person in the theater, and the movie absolutely sucked me into this super engaging, interesting world. It doesn't seem like the movie takes place on Earth, so there's so many things that happen that are just the kinds of things that really fire up my imagination. The music is incredible. There's so many long shots of rising tension and literal rising water where the characters are trying to escape to find some sort of any port in the storm, kind of. It is so, so well done. It is such a raw movie in the sense that none of the animals speak, so the movie is operating on the most fundamental level of, like, oh, that's a cute thing. I don't want it to die, and now I'm stressed because it seems like it might die. Like, it is just operating at such a pure, empathetic, emotional level, and every piece of the movie fits into bringing that emotional experience of trying to survive this crazy thing to you, the audience. And I think the movie succeeds at it in spades. So if you haven't seen this movie, I cannot recommend it more. This is probably, well, probably not the biggest recommend. I think you should watch all of these movies, but in terms of the ones that I've seen talked about the least, this is probably the one I've seen talked about the least, and I most strongly think everyone would enjoy.
I don't know, Nathan. That premise sounds a little silly.
No, it's so good. Also, the whole movie was made in Blender, which is like anyone can get a Blender subscription. So the idea that you could just get a subscription to a thing and make a fantastic movie like this is so funny to me.
Okay, yeah, I have not seen that movie. I did not realize that. So does it just not have a voice cast?
No, all of the animals just are animals. They act like animals. There's only a few things that they do that's kind of like, I don't know if animals could do that. But yeah, there's no, it's such a, again, I cannot express how much it is such a unique film experience. And this was kind of the year for unique sort of films. I did see Hundreds of Beavers, and I do think it's really unique. It's not on my list, but...
It's funny you should say that, because I have the... I watched that movie, like, yesterday. Or not yesterday.
Oh, really?
A few days ago, and I had the exact same reaction.
That it's just very unique.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say Flo is a similar thing. But, yeah, it's so good, Elliot. You should see it.
Wow. Okay. That does sound really interesting. I just thought it was like your typical kids movie of like anthropomorphic animals being like, oh, we have to run away from the waves and learn about friendship.
No, it's not. I would much more compare it to, again, the video game comparisons don't help it, but it's very similar to like Journey in that It's just like you're experiencing something that feels really mystical and new. And you don't really understand all of the nuances of the world that it's taking place in. But because it's operating on just like a fundamental level of you don't want a cat to drown, it works so well.
Mm, wow. I'm going to have to watch that movie because I love Journey. okay, then. I think you've seen all of my favorite movies from this year.
Yes!
Oh, except for the last one.
Dang it.
I'm going to start out with Conclave. Mm. I've already talked about this movie. I actually got it for Christmas. Go me. And I rewatched it, and it absolutely holds up. This is such a me movie that it's just guys talking about having really dry theological conversations about... ecclesiastical and theological questions, and I just eat that kind of stuff up. But to give myself a little bit of credit, I do think it is really interesting and really compelling, and has a really strong cast of likable characters. It looks great. The soundtrack, whoo boy, that is a good soundtrack. I've been listening to it casually. And Ralph Fiennes, what a year he had with this and The Return, and like completely opposite characters in terms of appearance, because in Conclave he looks old, like he's got the liver spots and he's all wrinkled, and then in The Return he's like jacked, dude. Like he looks better than 90% of the young men that I see on a daily basis. Just watch it, man. Try it for yourself and see what you think.
Yeah, Conclave is pretty good. I predicted this would be on your top five list, which is why I recommended my fiance get you this for Christmas. So I love being able to call my shots like that. Anyway, my number four movie of the year is going to be Jason Reitman's Saturday Night. I know I mentioned this a couple times around when it was coming out that I was excited for it, and then that it very much lived up to my expectations. I think this is just a fantastic... It's just a great movie. The ensemble cast is incredible. Everyone is doing an amazing job of portraying their respective character. The soundtrack is fantastic. Very disappointed to see that the score is not going to be nominated for an Oscar, because it wasn't in the short list of scores that would be could possibly be nominated, but it's so great. It's such a fun jazzy score, and the movie, it's been compared a lot to Birdman, which I think is kind of fair. I think it's very similar to one of my favorite movies from last year, or maybe 2 years ago, which is Blackberry. That this is just a movie about the insane head-rushing highs you get from being on the cutting edge of something. And I think, and this might just be me bringing in stuff that the movie doesn't necessarily actually have in the text, but I watched the movie as me, so I can't, you know, I can only tell you how I felt watching it. And I felt like the movie did a really great job of, even though it's only taking place in, like, the 90 minutes before Saturday Night Live went live for the first time, I feel like there's a lot of scenes that are very poetic because we know that eventually these people would not be on the cutting edge of what they are. That, like, no one is looking to Saturday Night Live right now for cutting edge avant-garde comedy. And certainly no one is looking to Chevy Chase for any of those things. So scenes where someone tells Chevy Chase, like, hey, you're a nobody, you'll never be anything, I found very compelling, because it's like, yeah, yes, obviously Chevy Chase would go on to be very famous, but, like, eventually Chevy Chase became the guy telling the new kid, hey, you're not funny, you'll never be funny. Like, literally Chevy Chase did that to Donald Glover on the set of Community. So, like, the fact that eventually all of these things would fade away, but for 90 minutes, everyone is just living in, like, this is crazy, we're about to make something exciting, I think makes for a really compelling, interesting watch. And I'm kind of disappointed the movie's not getting as many notes as I think it deserves. But that's kind of true for a lot of the movies on my list.
Okay, Nathan.
I thought it was
really unlike
good.
Flo, my reaction is just
skepticism.
Yep. Moving on. Number four, I've got Dune Part 2. And this is going to be, again, a pretty quick one, because we've got a whole review on this. So just to sum up that review, very interesting. The thematic material marries perfectly with the formal material. Speaking of lookers, whew, this is probably the best-looking movie, I think, of the year, in terms of cinematography and special effects. And, oh my gosh, the scene on, I can't remember what, the Duke's planet where we're introduced to the nephew. Dang, that is good stuff, man. And yeah, another fantastic score from Hans Zimmer. I don't really care that it's not going to be up for the Oscar. Like, he's got enough Oscars. Let someone else have a chance, Hans. But yeah, I mean, Denis, he is not letting me down. And I say full speed ahead on Dune Messiah. Let's keep it going.
I was gonna put this at last, because I think my next three are virtually a tie. I'm gonna move this one up just because you already brought it up, and that's Dune Part 2 as well. Like you said, we did a review on this. I reviewed it very favorably. Again, a kind of like Flo, I think this is just an amazing, is probably one of my favorite experiences in a theater. That it is such a testament to the transformative power of cinema, that you sit there and for 2.5 hours you're on Arrakis. Like, never for a second do you see something where you're like, oh, that looked shoddy, that didn't look believable. You're in Dune for 2 hours and 40 minutes, and it's perfect. It's amazing blockbuster filmmaking. And if there was any justice in the world, Denis would be running away with everything like Nolan was last year. But instead, we've got to have frickin' Wicked getting stuff.
Whoa, Nathan. You got to be careful with that kind of thing. We could get into serious trouble. Wicked fans do not mess around.
I'll say this. Wicked narrowly missed being on my least favorite movies of this year.
Oh my gosh. Cut the tape.
Narrowly missed. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, like, okay, way to really recover. No one's gonna know. Yeah, all right. So are you just, is it my turn now, I guess?
Yeah, it's Dune Part 2 is right, also right. On my top five.
Numero tres, I've got A Different Man. This is one of those movies that really came in clutch at the last minute to save me from having to put, I don't know, a movie that I just decently enjoyed on the list rather than something that I was like, oh yeah. And to this movie, I say, oh yeah. If you didn't know, this is a movie about a man with, I can't remember. It's like neurofibromatosis, something like that. Yeah. Which is basically, it's made him, it's a disability. And so it's like tumors, I think, benign tumors that grow, and it kind of messes up your face, or it can in some instances, like in this case. And he undergoes a radical new kind of treatment to basically make him look quote unquote normal. And so it's about him living life as a quote unquote normal man, as a different man, in fact. Yeah, this movie has, I think the reason, one of the big reasons this movie succeeds is the character, the central character, who is really ably played by Sebastian Stan, or wait, Sebastian Shaw?
No, Stan is right.
Okay. Who's Sebastian Shaw? I don't know.
Isn't that the villain from X-Men First Class?
Oh, shoot. That would be bad. So it's definitely not that. It's Sebastian Stan, not Kevin Bacon.
Good.
Hey, yeah, there you go. I gotta stay on track here, man. Yeah, so I think, so this movie is like about, in that pretentious, oh, this movie is about youth kind of way. This movie is about identity and like changes in one's identity and how superficial that can be. Because his journey, I won't spoil it. Like all of these movies, I don't want to spoil it because I do think that people should get out there and watch them. But the way that he interacts with the world has not necessarily changed, and the way that he thinks about himself has not necessarily changed. And that is heartbreaking and very compelling, especially when we introduce the character of Oswald, who's another, who has a person with that same disease. And yeah, I won't get into the spoilers, but it's just fascinating. And I gotta say, again, I won't spoil it, but this movie's final line is 10 out of 10 perfection. Without being ironic or stupid jokey, I think that this is one of the greatest closing lines I've ever heard. Like, it's up there with I'm having an old friend for dinner. Not in the same, like, pithy quippiness, but just, like, it is such a gut punch.
Yeah, I've seen that movie. I didn't like it as much as Elliot did. I do think it's still worth a watch, and I think it is compelling. It's a little artsier than I would like my movies to be. Anyway, my number two movie, since I moved Doom Part 2 to 3... that's going to be Jesse Eisenberg's A Real Pain. And I think I've mentioned this before. I mentioned it in our episode on Banshees of Inisherin. I think it's just a fantastic movie. It's such a great journey. It's mostly just about two cousins going on a kind of Holocaust remembrance tour of Poland. And I think it is just so... The two big things are the acting is incredible. Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin are amazing. And the screenplay is amazing. If this doesn't win Best Original Score, again, there's no justice. There's not going to be a lot of justice in the world in 2025, is what I'm saying. But I think it's so amazing. The characters are so well-rounded and three-dimensional. And I love how realistic the movie is, how... well developed the story of these characters and how so much changes without anything changing. And I think this movie is just incredibly compelling, and that's because of the writing and because of the two main characters. I love this movie. I think everyone should watch it, because I think it is very much a kind of like, oh, they don't make movies like this anymore kind of movie, that it's about something and nothing. And I know that sounds really pretentious, but I found the movie very, very compelling, and I find it difficult to put everything that I found compelling about the movie into words, because some of it is just like two guys smoking up on a building's roof, and I'm like, dang, I feel that.
I hate when people say that they don't make movies like this anymore, when they're talking about a movie that has been made just like out. That
Well, that's why I said it's very, they don't make movies like that. Like, it's the type of movie I would expect to see people say that about. Wouldn't say that about it.
Clearly they're wrong, because obviously they are making movies like that.
Well, that's why I didn't say it. That's why I just said that other people would say it.
Oh,
other
sure.
Wrong people would say gosh. It. I would never say it.
Anyway, I definitely like this movie. It's not on my list. I haven't been able to see the kind of things that you see in it. But who knows, maybe on rewatch, I'll be right there with you. But for now, I do think that is definitely a really strong, well above average movie. and I do think people should watch it. My number two is Juror number two.
Oh.
Again, this is another one of those movies that I watched at the very last minute. And yeah, I think that all of the comparisons to 12 Angry Men or The Verdict or what have you are right on the money. But this is definitely, I think, a modern. It feels very modern. Not just in the sense that it's not in black and white or anything, but it feels like a more modern lens is being cast on this situation. I gotta be honest. So the movie is about, and this isn't spoiling because it's just like the plot of the movie. The movie is about a man on a jury for a murder that he believes he may have committed. And so it's about his conflict of what to do with that. And I gotta say, I had no idea how it was gonna go. And that seems like such a stupid thing to say because you're not supposed to, but oftentimes it feels like in movies, I have from the get-go, like, oh, okay, obviously he's gonna come clean and some kind of deus ex machina is going to get him out of having to pay any kind of consequences. That is not the case whatsoever here. Like, throughout the whole thing, and a big part of it is the main character is so compelling and so sympathetic. And there's so much... Oh, I feel like maybe we should do a whole review on this movie, but there's so much, like, bound up in his character of redemption and its attainability or lack thereof that is a big part of his motivations and his conflict. And yeah, I was just, throughout the whole movie, I was like, man, I really want things to work out for this guy, but the movie is so well crafted that you're at that juncture of like, oh man, I really want things to work out for this guy, but also like, it can't. In a just world, he can't have that happy ending. And I won't spoil it, whether it's a happy ending or not. But yeah, it is. It's fantastic, and the acting is spectacular. Nicholas Hoult, another person who's had a great year between this and Nosferatu. I think he was in something else. Can't remember what. So maybe I'm just completely wrong about that. But anyway, yeah, really good. Way to go, Clint Eastwood. I'm not even sure if is he still, like, I don't know, cognizant of his surroundings? I mean, he has to be if he's making movies like this.
He's currently prepping his next movie. He's very cognizant.
Wow. If you see pictures of him, it's like, dang. But he's, I mean, respect to that man. He is still pushing through.
I'm so happy that you had that, because my number one movie is also Juror number two. And, for everything you said, I cannot more strongly agree with everything. I would love to do a full review of this movie, because, yeah, at no point did I know how the movie was going to go, which is such a... I mean, when you watch a lot of movies, it gets a little frustrating to... You know, you can see movies that are really good that still have a story that you're like, I've seen this before, or I'm familiar with these kind of tropes. But to watch a movie where you genuinely have no idea what it's about to do, and I very much agree with you, it is similar. It's the easy comparisons are The Verdict, 12 Angry Men. I think it is very much a modern version of those movies, that it has a lot of cynicism, it has a lot of skepticism, there's no easy answers at any point of this movie. It's a movie that weaponizes, that features characters weaponizing sympathy, but the movie itself is weaponizing your sympathy for compelling stories to get you more invested and to get you more wrestling with the questions of the movie. That, yeah, like you said, in a just world, should this story have a happy ending? And what does justice look like? Because as soon as you involve more than like two people, justice starts to look different for different people. And I thought this movie was so fantastic. The acting is amazing, like you said. It is baffling to me that Warner Brothers didn't choose to put their Oscar chips on this film, because how could Clint not win with a stunner of a movie like this? I think there's so many different interesting ideas. If you haven't watched this movie, you absolutely should. Everyone I've talked to who has watched this movie has said how much they loved it. I watched it with my fiance, and she was genuine. Like, the movie ended, and she's like, Nathan, I don't know what to do with what I feel. Like, she was so distracted by, like, how compelling the movie was. She was getting nervous for the characters. It is such an amazing ride, and I think it is. I guess all I can say is they don't make movies like this anymore.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, stupid Hollywood.
But seriously, it is such an incredible movie, and I think it is a movie that deserves continuous reevaluation. It's dropped through the cracks because of a complete mishandling of its release. But I'm very excited to see people picking it up and talking about how good it is. And yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, speaking of No Justice, like, it's like it's like a movie about somebody being imprisoned for a crime they didn't commit. Like a studio exec being like, oh, this movie's terrible, bury it. And it's just a miscarriage of justice. Way to go, Warner Bros. Come on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, David.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to my number one favorite movie of the year. And this was an easy pick for me. Like, it was not much of a contest. That's going to be Nosferatu.
Okay.
And, oh man, this movie's really good. And I am not even the biggest Robert Eggers fan. Like, I like him, definitely, and I think he's talented, and I'm glad that he's continuing to make movies, but this is so far above everything else he's made. I don't even know where to begin. Like, Count Orlok, the antagonist, is just fantastic. And Bill Skarsgård, dude, I'm not sure if I was on this set and he was doing the things that he's doing, I'm not sure if afterwards I could be like, I could like fall out of character and be like, hey man, do you want to go grab lunch or something? I think I would just kind of like scoot away from him and purposefully not make eye contact, because this is one of the most chilling, most compelling, most terrifying movie antagonists I have seen in a very, very long time. And the things that Bill Skarsgård does with his voice, it's quite chilling. But I think that what really does this movie for me is how epic it is. Like, this is a high-stakes, dramatic, very grand movie. And that's one of the things that I really hope that if you're not much of a horror person like me, I'm not that big of a horror person, I think that you should watch this movie, because so much of its appeal to me was just how, like, I don't know, almost Lord of the Rings-esque, or maybe that's a little bit too much, but the sense of it's like horror movies typically will have fairly low stakes, right? It's just kind of about a pretty isolated group of people in danger of being killed, and that's kind of it. But this movie is so much more sweeping in its scope and its scale. And of course, Robert Eggers, it looks fantastic. Incredible performances all around, not a bad one in the bunch. It looks like Bloodborne, which I love Bloodborne, so yeah. As soon as the movie was done, I was like, boom, there it is. Favorite movie of the year, no question.
Wow, yeah, I've made multiple plans to go and see it, and then the plans kept falling through, so I haven't seen Nosferatu yet. Obviously, I want to, because I am a big Dracula sort of fan, and that's a stunning recommendation from my brother there. So Anyway, those are the movies of the year. Send us an email. Was there something that we left off that you feel like is just criminal that we didn't talk about? Send us an email. Let us know. What was your favorite movie of the year? Was your favorite movie of the year Megalopolis? You know, send us an email and Elliot can badmouth you or something. I don't know. Anyway, looking ahead, though, it is currently 2025. We're looking ahead to this upcoming year, the movies of this upcoming year. Elliot, what are the movies that we should be excited for? Or what are the movies that you're excited for in 2025?
Dude, this was tough. I went to multiple websites and just like Wikipedia pages of movies scheduled to release in 2025. And it was just barren for me. Cause it was like Captain America, Brave New World, or the Minecraft movie. And I've chosen two obvious, like no one is excited for this examples, or maybe people are excited for Captain America. I don't know. But I'm not. So I really struggled. And in the end, I chose movies that, yes, I'm definitely looking forward to, but not movies like Oppenheimer was a few years ago, where I was like, oh, yes, this is going to be so great. I am eager for these movies. But I am excited for Mickey 17, Bong Joon-ho's upcoming movie with Robert Pattinson. It looks really interesting. Sci-fi movie about a man who's being cloned. Can't remember why. Maybe just for fun. But yeah, I like Bong Joon-ho, and I'm looking forward to that. And the other one is 28 Years Later. Mm. It's got a great trailer. I have now watched both of the other movies, and 28 Days Later is really good. 28 Weeks Later sucks. That movie is terrible. But it had very few people from the original were on that. So, yeah, and honestly, I'm just kind of excited to see what Danny Boyle is up to, because how long has it been since he made a movie?
I feel like it's been a bit. I'm not, like, following Danny Boyle's every move, but I feel like this 28 years later has kind of been in development for a couple of years, so it's got to be, like, 4 or 5 since the last Danny Boyle movie, I'd imagine.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are the two that I could find. And I don't want to badmouth those movies of like, oh, that's just like that's all that I could find. Like, I am legitimately excited for these movies, and they're definitely like day one, or probably not day one, like weekend one watches for me.
That's interesting. I already said I was excited for Mickey 17, but it was supposed to come out in 2024, so obviously I'm still excited for it. I found a pretty great list. I don't know. Although I might have been looking at a list of movies that are anticipated to release in 2025, but there's possibilities that they might not. Seems like everyone thinks Terrence Malick's next movie is coming out in 2025, which I don't see any reason to believe. But anyway, the three that I found that I feel pretty confident are going to come out in 2025 are The Phoenician Scheme, which is Wes Anderson's next movie. I have absolutely adored the last two Wes Anderson movies. Asteroid City was my favorite movie from 2023, and The French Dispatch, if we had been doing the podcast, would have been in my top 5 of 2021. So obviously I'm over the moon excited for his next movie. Regardless, Michael Cera, I think, is the lead for this movie, which is a fascinating pick. I don't think he's been in a Wes Anderson movie yet, so I'm always interested to see that. I think it's something about spies in Europe or something. I have no idea, but it's Wes Anderson. Like, he keeps getting better and making more interesting versions of the same movie, and while his style has superficially not developed since he started making movies with this sort of style, it feels like he's so much more confident, and the style is so much more in service to the story than it has ever before. So I'm incredibly excited for this. My next one is No Other Choice, which is Park Chan-wook's next movie. He directed a couple of movies that are really beloved, like The Handmaiden and Old Boy. But his previous movie, Decision to Leave, was one of my favorite movies from 2023, or 2022 maybe. But this is his newest movie. The premise sounds amazing. It's about a guy who loses his job in a very small sort of field, and as he's trying to find another job in that field, he decides to better his odds by starting to kill the other people who are applying to this sort of job, which I think is a classic Park Chan-wook sort of premise. I want to say that there's a trailer out for this and that the trailer looked really amazing. If there's not a trailer and I'm just hallucinating things, I'm incredibly excited for this movie because, again, I really, really enjoyed his previous one, and this is another director who feels like he just keeps getting better. And then my last one, Elliot, you're going to really love this, is I Love Boosters, which is Boots Riley's second movie. And if you don't know who Boots Riley is, he directed Sorry to Bother You in like 2015, 16, something like that, maybe 2017. And I love Sorry to Bother You. It is one of the most avant-garde, in-your-face, fun, exciting, unique movies to release in the last decade. Elliot does not feel the same way towards it. But I think Boots Riley, if this movie is anything like Sorry to Bother You, then it's going to be an absolute ride. It's going to be something you want to see before anything gets spoiled, before any story gets shown to you. He just makes such interesting. He's made one really great movie, and I'm really, really hopeful that this second movie can be just as good. So those are the three. There were some other ones. Richard Linklater has two movies coming out next year, including a movie about the making of Breathless or something that sounds kind of unique. There were other movies that I thought about putting on here. But these were the three that I honestly could be a day one as soon as they're in a theater near me. I'm in a seat watching these films.
I have to say, Nathan, those are some very poor choices.
Even no other choice? I feel like that sounds kind of fun.
Park Chan-wook, like, has these really good, interesting concepts, and I'm like, oh, maybe this is the time, but every time just messes it up and puts out something very low quality, so I can't imagine that trend is going to be broken this time around.
You just haven't seen the Park Chan-wook. I genuinely think you would really enjoy Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Sympathy for Mrs. Vengeance, or Lady Vengeance.
Also, I have to say, and like, as long as I'm alienating people, I might as well just alienate the entire movie-going audience. I hate Breathless. That movie is trash. That main character sucks. He is such an annoying SOB. I really hated him. I have no interest in learning about how that movie was made. It was made because Jean-Luc Godard, I don't know, smoked some weed and flipped through his old noir novels and was like, oh, this would be cool, bro.
Wow. I agree that I don't think Breathless is very good, as well as I think this is really nitty gritty and our episode's already way long, so no one cares about this. I also think there's other French New Wave movies that came out earlier and are better that deserve a title of like the French, like Breathless is usually cited not as like, oh, I love this story, but just like, oh, it's so forward thinking in terms of the cinematography and the editing. There's other French New Wave movies that came out before it that are more innovative and more interesting. So I don't even think it really deserves its place in the film canon as like, oh, you have to watch this to get the French New Wave. Watch an Agnès Varda movie. Watch a Truffaut movie. Like, those are way better. I know you don't agree with me on the Agnes Varda thing, but there's other better.
Truffaut's fine. I like Truffaut.
There's other better French New Wave. Yeah, you like 400 Blows, which I don't think is that great.
Sure.
Anyway, but those are our thoughts on some of the movies and some of the things that we saw.
So take it.
In 2024. We're really excited to keep bringing you new things. Maybe we will do a review for Juror number 2. But first, next week, I think our plan is to do the 90s episode, that we're going to be putting together a list of our top 10 movies from the 90s. So be sure to send us an email if you've got a 90s movie that you think should be on the list. What, Elliot?
I just want to say that life is hard and full of disappointments.
Oh, of course.
Life is hard and full of disappointments. I'm sorry if my voice sounded terrible throughout this whole thing. It's because I'm still a little sick.
Yeah. So hopefully Elliot feels better. Email us with some well wishes for Elliot. Anything I can think of to say, email us.
Email me some aspirin.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening. We're really excited to keep doing this podcast in 2025, and have a great week.